This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my. What a day. A lot going on today. And this rooftop solar thing, I think, is frankly a big deal. The Trump, you know, doing harm to our planet by pulling out of the Paris Accords. I don't know if you saw the story, but Erdogan, the increasingly dictator of Turkey, the president of Turkey, let's say, is now talking about pulling out of the Paris Agreement because Trump. And it's like, really? This is the direction we want to go? This is a Western value, to quote Steve Miller via Donald Trump in his speech? I mean, it's remarkable. In the geeky science area, this shocked me. I found this fascinating. This was in Healthy Living magazine, and the headline, it's by Carolyn Gregoire, and the headline is "Targeting Gut Bacteria May Be the Key to Preventing Alzheimer's." And then the subhead, "Diet Could Be a Powerful Mode of Prevention." And I've been watching, you know, I've been following the literature on this. My mother died of Alzheimer's, so I'm conscious of it, probably more than most. And there's been a striking amount of research lately that has not yet, as far as I can tell, gotten out of the "is this correlation or causation" question. In other words, let me get right to the point here. A striking amount of research correlating high sugar diets with dementia. And some are even alleging particularly high fructose corn syrup. I can't point to a specific study on that. But that there may be an association between, you know, eating a lot of sugar and getting Alzheimer's disease or getting dementia. But this study indicates that it is the microflora, the gut bacteria, that is actually driving the process. Now, that makes perfect sense when you tie it in with the eating too much sugar thing, because people who eat diets that are really high in sugar have a completely different gut flora bacterial profile from people who eat no sugar at all. There's different kinds of microorganisms that will choose to inhabit our guts depending on the kind of food that we put in there as fuel for them. So, to this study, mounting research, this by, as I said, Carolyn Gregoire, mounting research continues to show the links between the health of the gut and that of the brain. This is a study out of Lund University in Sweden, and found that unhealthy intestinal flora can accelerate the development of Alzheimer's disease. This was published in Scientific Reports on February 8th. Demonstrates that mice with Alzheimer's have a different gut bacterial profile than those who do not have the disease. And, of course, the microbiome is highly responsive to dietary and lifestyle factors. Exercise also affects your gut bacteria. And in a new study, Helenius and her colleagues revealed a direct causal relationship between gut bacteria and signs of Alzheimer's in mice. When a group of bacteria-free mice were colonized with bacteria of rodents who had Alzheimer's, they then also developed the plaque, the brain plaques indicative of Alzheimer's. When these bacteria-free mice were colonized with the bacteria of healthy rodents, however, they developed significantly fewer brain plaques, beta amyloid plaques between nerve cells are the central marker of the disease. This is astonishing. Composition of the bacteria in the gut is determined by a mix of genetics and lifestyle factors. It's also, by the way, determined by whether or not your mother had a vaginal or a cesarean section birth. It's also influenced by whether or not you were breastfed. And it's also influenced in a huge way by how frequently over the course of your life you've taken antibiotics, how long a period of time you took them for, and which antibiotics you took. Because antibiotics just, like, you know, it's like walking into the gut microbiome. There's, you know, we've identified now more than 400 different kinds of bacteria that can live in the gut. It's like going in there with a antibacterial flamethrower, you know, and just, and then of course the bacteria comes back, and what comes back might not be the stuff that was originally there or that should be there. So I find this fascinating. I'm keeping an eye on it, and I'm continuing to take my probiotics. And I suggest you do too. There was another piece. This is also in the geeky science arena that I wanted to share with you. Actually, a couple of them, two more. One, Aneri Patani in the New York Times last week, this was July 6th, found that in this new study, that humans migrated into colder northern climates, and this produced a genetic mutation that knocks about a centimeter off height, but increases the risk of osteoarthritis by 80%. But it may have helped people survive the most recent ice age. And, you know, this is the evolutionary trade-off thing. The mutation of the regulatory region analyzed in the study is present in more than 50% of the population in Europe and Asia. In some Asian populations, it's up to 90%. And, you know, it's just, you know, one of those interesting things. And then finally, Tom Price reveals how stupid he thinks you are in one tweet. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price, this is from last week's Think Progress, Alan Rupar. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price, former inside stock trader when he was in Congress, would have you believe that same Trump care health bill would strip Medicaid coverage from 15 Americans by 2016. 26 is somehow not connected to Medicaid. He said, this was his tweet. We need to break the beltway mentality. Billions in new spending is not a cut. And, you know, Donald Trump then tweeted, Democrats purposely misstated Medicaid under a new Senate bill. It actually goes up. And Trump care supporters are now framing the devastating impact the bill would have as liberating low-income people from health insurance they don't want or don't need. John Cornyn tweeting, it's not lose, it's choose. Apparently you believe freedom is optional. Insane. Oh, and the third geeky science story I was going to share with you. This has to do with TRP channels. The primary receptors of capsaicin, which is the hot stuff in chili peppers. Consuming red hot chili peppers is associated with a 13% lower risk of death. The association of red hot chili pepper consumption and mortality, a large population-based cohort study, is the title of the study. Analyzed data from more than 16,000 Americans in the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey version 3. And they followed them for a median of 19 years, 18.9 years. So this is a huge study, 16,000 Americans over a 19-year period. The study found that people who eat red hot chili peppers tend to be younger, male, white, Mexican-American, married, and smoke cigarettes, drink alcohol, and consume more vegetables and meats, and had lower HDL cholesterol, lower income, and less education. So we've got that. And, Then they say, although the mechanism in peppers that could delay death is uncertain, but they have a 13% lower risk of dying. Transient receptor potential, TRP channels, the primary receptors for pungent agents such as capsaicin, may be partly responsible for the observed connection. Capsaicin, which has antimicrobial properties, may prevent obesity and regulate coronary blood flow. The blood flow through your heart. These results, this is verbatim from the study. The results add to the literature by corroborating the main results of an earlier study. They're distinct in that they draw from a different population and thus support the generalizability of the protective effects of hot red chili peppers. I remember when Louise and I were young, when we were first married, we were running this thing called the Michigan Healing Arts Center in Okemos, and we had a physician and a chiropractor, and Dr. Christopher came to town. He was still alive back then. He was an herbalist, and we studied herbalism under Dr. Christopher for the better part of a half a year. He parked himself in East Lansing and created a little community around him. And he had this thing where every morning he would take a teaspoon. No, it was might have been a tablespoon even. It was anyhow. He'd take a spoon of ground red hot pepper and stir it into 5 or 6 ounces of cold water and chug it down. And he said it was the best thing for ulcers and it was the best thing for your health and you need to do this. And we owned an herbal tea company at the time also. And so we had, I mean, literally a half a ton of ginseng root there. And so I mixed 50-50 ginseng and red pepper. And Louise and I took this every day. And Louise took it throughout her pregnancy with our first child. And to this day, our oldest child loves hot peppers. As I think she was exposed to them, you know, in the womb. But it's really remarkable. But it's supposed to make you, you know, reduce your risk of mortality by 13%. So for what it's worth. And they were even looking at populations that had, you know, that smoked, drank, had, you know, low income. I mean, things that are supposed to diminish the probability of a long and healthy life. If they ate hot red pepper, 13% drop. Anyhow, we'll be back with your calls and the politics of the day right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Stick around. Back with your calls right now. And welcome back. Mary in Arlington, Texas, watching us on Free Speech on the Dish Network. Hey, Mary, what's on your mind today?
Oh, yes. Thank you. I just wanted to say there's many things. First of all, when Reagan became the president, of course, we went downhill from there. But I wanted to speak mostly about the Heritage Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Heritage Foundation has been a thorn in our side, you know. Immediately when they found out how smart Hillary was, they started downplaying. You know, she's a lesbian, she's this, you know.
And I don't know that that was coming out of Heritage. That was coming out of the whole right-wing-osphere.
Well, exactly. But. And what is right-wing? Heritage Foundation.
Yeah, but they tend to couch their bigotry, for lack of a better word, or their positions, let's say, in highfalutin language. They wouldn't use phrases like she's a lesbian. I just can't imagine that.
But they allowed it, and they, you know what I mean? No,
yeah.
You're exactly right. They didn't say that. They did not say that. But at the same time, they started downplaying her, and they started looking at everything that was going on.
Mm.
You know, everything seemed to be wrong, whether it be Travelgate or, you know, whatever, Whitewater, you know. But what I'm saying here is that we have allowed this to go on time and time again. We're doing it right now. And we see it every day on the news. Every day, you know, Hillary Clinton, you know, and she is crooked, Hillary Clinton. Our president is a crooked one. He's the one that has been, found guilty in a court of law with cheating people out of their... I think they came to a settlement.
Actually, yeah, I don't think he was found guilty. I think that he settled out of court for $25 million.
And I studied that because it was simply that he came to a settlement.
Yeah.
But he tells lies every other day, and nobody ever says, oh, that's a lie. But it still goes on. You understand what I'm saying here, Tom?
I do. I understand exactly what you're saying. And
the Democrats are taking a back seat, and they shouldn't. Not at all. We have done some great things. Some very great things. I'm 77 years old. I've watched politics ever since I can remember when the Rosenbergs, you know, that was under Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm.
And you looked all over the world, and everybody wanted to say, no, don't do this. And what do? We put them to death. You know, and I was so against that. Now, right now, we have this poor little child here in England. I said, oh, look, this is what, single payer, but
Yeah. So, National Health Service, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it does. They're going to let him die.
Well, he's dying no matter what. I mean, the kid has got a fatal, I believe it's genetic, a fatal condition. The question is, are they going to, you know, keep him alive with machines for another
exactly,
few months?
Or whatever. We don't know, but they're going to promote it to us.
Yeah. Now, this is the Terry Schiavo of the UK. I get it. Yeah, Mary, thank you for the call. I understand exactly where you're coming from, and I agree. Thank you. So here's the biggest problem that we have with having a literally everyday deceptive, essentially propaganda network on the air in the United States. That would be Fox so-called news, putting forward propaganda that reflects the worldview of its oligarch billionaire owner, Rupert Murdoch, and the multimillionaires who run the network. And the problem is that they say things that just aren't true. And they do it on a regular basis. I mean, you know, there's an entire website devoted to tracking it down. Go to newshounds.us. We watch Fox so you don't have to. They literally every day post, you know, outrageous stories. And then mediamatters.org, which does a more kind of intellectual job of it and a more repertorial job, but the exact same thing. Media Matters points out, you know, how Fox basically lies to us or lies to their viewers. Now, that in and of itself, I arguably would not be a problem. So you got a television network that lies to its viewers all the time. But here's where it becomes a problem. When one of its viewers is the president of the United States and he believes the lies. This morning, Donald Trump tweeted out that James Comey had committed a crime by leaking secret information. Turns out that's not true. Donald Trump, his tweet from today, from this morning, James Comey leaked, and then in all caps, classified information, back to lower caps, to the media. That is so illegal. Well, if he had done that, it would be illegal. But James Comey created 9 memos out of his meetings with Donald Trump. 5 of them had classified information, 4 of them did not. And the memo that he gave to a friend to release to the media had no classified information in it. And he was clear about that. He testified about that to Congress. Nobody is disputing that until this morning on Fox and Friends. And on Fox and Friends, it's not like they came out and said it and lied. They just provided a context that caused all of their viewers to believe a lie. Specifically, the lie being that Comey leaked classified information. He did not. He never said he did. Congress didn't say he did. The FBI didn't say he did. Nobody said he did, except for Fox and Friends this morning. And they didn't explicitly say it. They just organized their news story in such a way that everybody who watched it believed that, including our doofus-in-chief, our tweeter-in-chief, the guy in the White House, got to be one of the most gullible people in America to watch Fox and Friends and believe that he's actually getting news. And so then he tweets that the former director of the CIA committed a felony. The president of the United States. When in fact, it's a lie from Fox. From the billionaire propaganda channel. I mean, this is how far we've fallen down this rabbit hole. I told you earlier, I was reading this book. It's titled America's Battle for Media Democracy. I was reading it this morning. And there's a whole chapter in there about the 1930s and how Franklin Roosevelt was so concerned that if big media corporations emerged, back then they were vigorously enforcing the Sherman Act, and they were doing a variation of it through the FCC with regard to ownership of newspapers and radio stations. There were no TV stations at the time. This was the 1930s. And they were saying you cannot own a radio station and a newspaper in the same city. Can't do it. That's too much power. Well, now, I mean, you know, exactly what Franklin Roosevelt was worried about. And what he was specifically worried about was corporatists taking over the media and presenting a slanted right-wing view of the world that, you know, otherwise you know, unsophisticated people would believe to be the truth. We're here. And the poor sucker is our president.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And because Fox chose to you know, lie, implicitly lie this morning, now the president is going to be in trouble. This is bizarre.
You can support the Tom Hartman Program and see video of our entire three-hour show over at patreon.com/TomHartman.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Wally in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Wally, what's on your mind today?
Hey, you know, I want to compliment you really on your command, your knowledge and command of detail. It's amazing to me, really. I've followed you for a long time.
Thank you, Wally.
Anyway, yeah. And now you mentioned the Russian collusion on this type of thing, and I doubt very much they're going to prove it, but if they did it. And the thing we do know is that the Democratic Party basically colluded. I mean, the members of the DNC and that type of thing colluded against Bernie Sanders.
Well, that's not collusion with a foreign country. I mean, when the word collusion is used, it's collusion with a foreign country. And what Donald Trump proved this morning was not necessarily that he engaged in collusion. In fact, if either of his accounts of that meeting are accurate, there was no collusion, but there was clearly an intent to be willing to collude, right? Right up front, he's like, oh, we're going to get some information, we're going to get some dirt on Hillary Clinton from a foreign government. I'm sorry, that's not something you do in American politics. If you've got dirt coming from a foreign government, you call the FBI.
All right, but the thing is, we had a chance to elect an honest guy in Bernie Sanders, and the Democratic Party and the media and all establishment kept us from doing it, by hook or by crook. But Donna Brazile and various people did it. And
you know, Wally, you could also make the argument that the reason Hillary Clinton lost the election was because Donald Trump got somewhere between $2 and $4 billion in free publicity. You know, most of it on Fox and on Morning Joe.
That's part of it too. But she was a flawed candidate. Period. Anyway. But Bernie would have been a much stronger candidate and would have won, in my opinion. But they kept him from doing that. The superdelegates and the whole thing kept him from doing that. And that is their problem. So I was just going to ask you about the lawsuit against the DNC. What's your opinion? And what do you think the outcome will be? Yeah. And if we can straighten out our own party to try to get someone like Bernie in, because they kept him out, basically.
Yeah. I frankly, and I probably should, Wally. I should. You know, learn more about it, but I don't know much of anything about the law. I know that there is a lawsuit proceeding against the DNC for that. What, right. You know, where it's at, where it's going to go, and what it's going to do, I frankly don't know. And I don't have a lot of interest in getting into intra-party squabbles or fights or whatever. I mean, the DNC was the DNC was horribly embarrassed by this. Debbie Wasserman Schultz lost her job. Donna Brazile lost her job. You've got Tom Perez and Keith Ellison running the DNC. These are both guys that I trust, particularly Keith Ellison. And I'm optimistic that the Democratic Party is moving in a positive direction. That's enough for me. I'm not going to sit around and relitigate either the Bernie Hillary election or the Hillary Trump election. The reality, we have what we have. We've got the Republican Party, and Wally, thanks a lot for the call. We have what we have. We've got the Republican Party doing everything that they can to destroy the social safety net and take us back to the world of Charles Dickens, which is actually a very stable economic system where the poor are guaranteed to stay poor. In fact, during the time of Charles Dickens, there were maximum wage laws. You couldn't pay people over a certain amount. Why? Because they did not want a middle class to emerge. Why didn't they want a middle class? Because middle classes tend to foment revolution. They tend to be pesky, troublesome things. You don't want an empowered populace if you're trying to run a scam on the people. And that's exactly what the Republicans are doing. And therefore, they need a disempowered populace, people who are broke, who are terrified, who are panicked, who are one step away from the poorhouse. Half of America now cannot deal with $1,000 expense. It would wipe them out. A medical bill, a car accident, half of America. eight men own more wealth than half the world. I mean, it's just, excuse me, 400 people own more wealth than half the world. Eight people own more wealth than half of America. And it's like, these are things that we should be paying attention to. Anyhow, Walter in Federal Way, Washington. Walter, what's on your mind today? Thanks for listening to SiriusXM.
Good morning, Tom. Well, I've been trying to find out the costing of basically single-payer health care, Medicare for All, whatever you want to call it. First, I'm in favor of it. I think it's the absolute solution. And I looked at Bernie's stuff from a year ago, and I saw about the tax increments, but I'm trying to figure out what the net increase is, because I think there's a lot of offsets.
Right.
And I don't think it's as bad as we are being led to believe. Whether we get there or not, another issue.
Right.
But, yeah. The other thing...
Walter, let me just give you some numbers that you can plug into your biocomputer and maybe do something with. In the UK, the average cost, in other words, if you take the population of the UK and you take the total health expenses of the UK and you divide it by the population, you come out with $3,400 a person, $3,433 a person. So that's the cost of healthcare in the United Kingdom, and everybody is covered, absolutely everybody from birth to death.
Yeah.
And if you look at much more expensive country, the most expensive single-payer system in the world is Norway's. Part of that is because Norway has a lot of very remote places, and they still build clinics and hospitals and things in remote places. And part of it is just that the Norwegians are very, very wealthy. They've got a huge, you know, a multi-trillion dollar oil fund, and they can afford it. So they gave themselves arguably the best single-payer healthcare system in the world. And the most expensive. And in Norway, if you take the population and you divide it into the total cost of healthcare, it comes out to $5,300 per person. Okay, so that's the most expensive single payer in the world, $5,300 a person. Canada's doing it in the neighborhood of around $4,000 a person. The UK does it for around $3,400 a person. You know what we're spending in the United States right now? And this, by the way, this is if you divide our entire population and you know, 20, 30 million of us don't have access to healthcare. So still, you divide all 320 or 30 or 40 million of us into what we spend on healthcare every year, it comes out to $8,200 per person. So we are spending an absurd amount of money for healthcare in this country. And, you know, most of that or much of that surplus, that extra cost, is going to the banksters who insert themselves between us and our hospitals, between us and our doctors, between us and our diagnostic procedures. They call themselves health insurance companies. Cut the middlemen out, and you save thousands of dollars. So there's your numbers.
That's exactly what I wanted to know. Well, I'm going to start writing letters again.
Okay, good.
It's obvious. I had another quick comment on Smedley Butler. I heard you on talking about him the other day.
Yeah.
You know, Smedley got to be kind of an isolationist.
Yes, he did.
He got there for a reason, because he was in Nicaragua, the Philippines, China, Cuba, and, you know, wherever else. And what was generating those engagements was the oligarchs.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And he knew it, and he was very upset about it. Walter, thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls right after this. Stick around. And welcome back. James, watching Free Speech TV in Spokane, Washington. Hey, James, what's up?
Good morning, Warrior.
Good morning, James. What's on your mind?
Just want to point out that this war on drugs, of course, is more like a war on people, firstly.
Yep.
And secondly, I wanted to point out that, you know, our Great Depression, that fell right in the middle of our last war on drugs, alcohol prohibition.
Yes, you're right.
And, this is so demoralizing and immoral and corrosive. And, you know, again, you know, the left has disappeared. Left has disappeared basically because of the war on drugs.
Yeah. Well, that was Nixon's thing. I mean, Nixon said, or Haldeman, you know, told, what was it, the Atlantic magazine, I think, or the New Yorker, or so, it was one of the bigger magazines a year or so ago. He said, you know, we had two enemies in the Nixon White House. We had the enemies of the anti-war hippies, basically, who were largely white, and African Americans who wanted civil rights. And oh, it's Harper's Magazine. Thank you, Troy. And he said, we couldn't make it illegal to be a hippie, and we couldn't make it illegal to be black. So we knew that the hippies liked to smoke pot, and heroin was growing in the African American community. So we just doubled, you know, massively increased the penalties on these two things, and then used them to disrupt those communities. And I know from personal experience back in the 60s that they didn't just, you know, use them to disrupt communities. I mean, they actually planted drugs on people. They actually, you know, set people up. They entrapped people aggressively as policy. And, you know, it's still going on. I mean, now it's the war on drugs is still going on. I agree with you, James. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And then on top of that, you've got now the war on terrorism, where, you know, we find like these guys down in Miami, you know, these, you know, what was it, six homeless guys. And, you know, hey, here's a bomb. How'd you like to take this bomb? Oh, sure. Yeah. What the heck? We need some shoes first. It's like, you know, we're repeating the same mistakes over and over again.
Well, you know, Tom, I spoke with you. You probably don't recall, but I spoke with Mark Pocan on your show one time about it. And I spoke with Bernie, however long ago that was, about it. And, you know, they're both decrying it, but nobody's talking about any proposed legislation.
Yeah.
So what are we to do?
Well, what's happening is, first of all, we're seeing it at the marijuana front, is that state by state, states are adopting medical marijuana, which, by the way, states that have medical marijuana legalized have, and recreational marijuana for that matter, have lower rates of opiate deaths. So, you know, people are using marijuana instead of pot. They also have lower rates of alcohol-related injuries and deaths. So that's a good thing. So I think, you know, people are waking up to the fact that we've been lied to all these years. There's some fascinating research going on with psychedelics right now and end-of-life issues and psychedelics and depression and psychedelics and PTSD. The military is doing some of these experiments. They're just basically picking up where they left off in 1968 when they outlawed most of that kind of research. And the stuff is actually effective and useful. The opiate crisis that we have, in my opinion, if you Google Rat Park and War on Drugs, I think you'll be amazed by the Rat Park story. I think that our opiate crisis is actually a despair epidemic that is happening, and you know we've got to get control of these things. But I'm totally with you, James. But I think that, you know, lacking any specific legislation, we are watching a sea change in political attitudes, and that's a good first step. It's a very good first step. James, thanks for the call, and thanks for watching Peace Coach TV. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Brian in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Brian, thanks for listening to Tune In. What's up?
Well, I just want to thank you for your show, Tom. I know you hear a lot of that, but it's just such a source of information and education.
Thank you, Brian.
And the way we move forward. I wanted to quickly mention the woman from North Carolina who, one of the things she should do is run for the board of her rural utility service.
This is the woman who called and said that the net metering in was it South Carolina?
Yeah,
North Carolina?
North Carolina.
Net metering that they paid, what, 14 cents a kilowatt hour, but they only sell it back for 5 or 6 cents a kilowatt hour. And out of 17,000 people in her county, only 50 are allowed to do that and all this other weird stuff.
Yeah, she needs to get on the board. It's a great way to get involved in politics at the local level.
That makes perfect sense, Brian.
What I called about, Tom, is election integrity. And I don't know much about this, but Mimi Kennedy, I know you and she share a seat on the Progressive Democrats of America.
Yeah, and Mimi's a friend also. She's a brilliant actress, too. Or actor.
She is touting election integrity problems based on a 22-minute movie called Fraction Magic. And I listened to a lecture on this, Tom. I'm no statistics computer wizard, but I would just wonder if you could invite her at some point to come on the air and talk about this fraction
sure.
magic.
Yeah, we've discussed it actually before, Brian. And both the film and Mimi's position and PDA's position and but it's a good reminder. Thank you for that. I'll let me talk to Mimi and see what we can organize. She's always, you know, the door is always open for Mimi Kennedy on this program. She is such a great person. So thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Charles in Southgate, California. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I've listened today. I haven't heard anybody talk about the internet.
Net neutrality?
Net neutrality. And I understand that tomorrow is a day of action and that on the 12th, we're going to see some big changes in how we get our internet.
How so?
Well, the companies that are involved are going to do things that resemble what the FCC assumed the Republicans want to do to our internet. In other words, when we go to log on to something, we're going to get, you know, death wheels or things that simulate a slowed down internet like we're going to get.
Well, that's interesting. I've got to do some research on this, Charles. This sounds like a great topic for tomorrow's show. I was unaware. I knew that the FCC was doing something this week, but I didn't know about a day of action tomorrow.
Well, it's not the FCC. It's people that are against what the FCC is proposing to do.
Right, right.
Like Comcast and Time Warner. And
what's
all
the main
things.
Group behind this, Charles?
Well, the group that I got involved with is called Free Speech Action.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll check out their website. Thanks, Charles, thank you for the heads up. I appreciate it. I got to move along here, but thank you very much for the call. Let's see here. Rich in Greenwood, Indiana. Hey, Rich, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thanks. By way of the last caller, there was something from the HBO program Last Week Tonight with John Oliver when this was their topic. They created a easy to jump to the right page at FCC's page by saying, go FCCyourself.com.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So back to what I wanted to get at, which is the Magnitsky Act. People aren't talking about it in a way. I've been trying to see if anybody wants to call it out for what it is and why the Kremlin doesn't like the Magnitsky Act. The Magnitsky Act is named for a murder victim of Vladimir Putin. Sergei Magnitsky was a very brave man. He was an attorney, and he was a tax attorney, and sort of forensic accounting. And he discovered a huge tax fraud being done by the oligarchs that ran the prison system. And for his trouble, he got grabbed, he got imprisoned, and he got beaten to death in one of these prisons
right.
by the behest of wonderful leader.
Presumably.
So, the reason that this is such a big deal is that somebody who's been poisoned twice, Vladimir Karamurza, got poisoned in 2015 and then again this year in February. And he's trying to get the Magnitsky Act into something international law application so that the oligarchs don't have access to the banking system, the global banking system that is permitting capital flight from rubles into other global currencies and our own dollars. This deserves to be known. And Alexei Navalny, who is a political candidate in the upcoming elections against Putin, has been spending 15-day terms in jail for protesting and bringing this aspect right. of Russian nationalism for the people. And, you know, getting rid of the political superclass that are the parasites. And there's a lot for us to be made aware of here and to keep present as we talk about this stuff.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you, Rich, that there's a fascinating backstory to this and that, the information is out there. I don't think that most Americans are all that interested in what's going on in the internal politics of other countries, even Russia, although, that seems to be the one that's right now at the top of everybody's tongue. But yeah, okay. Well, if you want more people to know about it, you just shared it with millions of people. So,
right on.
Mission accomplished. Rich, thanks for the call. Stephen in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Stephen, what's on your mind?
Oh, what's on my mind is, you know, you're talking about paying school taxes, and me and my wife, we don't have any kids, and for a while I was a little miffed at having to pay school taxes, but when I sat back once and realized, you know what, I went to school. If you look at it as you're paying for your schooling retroactively, then you're not really getting ripped off.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's an excellent point. Excellent point. Thank you, Stephen, for calling and making it. Bill in Wilmington, Delaware. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, I wanted to give you a little bit of my experience with the solar panels. The cost to me was absolutely nothing with the company that I got involved with, unless, of course, you take out the fact that I had to have my roof redone, which was going to have to be done anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
But after we got the solar panels installed, and then we went through a series of bureaucratic exercises with, you know, with my current provider, my electric bill went down to $25 a month with my, you know, my pre-solar provider.
Hmm.
And my solar provider charges me $80 a month at on a flat fee. Basically, it cost me nothing to get this installed, and it dropped my average electric bill about $120 a month.
Wow. That's great. And is this because Delaware has subsidies, or is it because it just produces electricity that cheaply? Or both?
Actually, I couldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to the people that came out before, you know, when I was considering it, and I asked them about various things that...
Oh, so you've got one of these
happen.
Deals where you're basically leasing the system? They actually own the system that's on your roof?
Right.
Ah, okay.
Okay, now I do have an option to buy that at a point in the future. Now I could buy that. I could have the battery, you know, the battery building or whatever they call it,
right,
built so that I could store that all in there.
Yeah, but you know, with Moore's Law going here, Bill, you know, I mean, you've got capacity doubling and prices dropping in half every 2, 3, 4 years. It's you probably not going to want to. But Bill, thanks for sharing your story with us, and thanks for listening to SiriusXM. Thank you all for being with us today. It's been a remarkable day. I'm sure there's a lot more to come. And we'll be back tomorrow. So in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us. That means you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're in. Run for the board of your local utility. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.